Hello, this is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's the 10th of January 2012, and today we're joined on the line for our regular conversation with David L. Smith, aka the Geneva Business Insider. Once again, you can find him at GenevaBusinessInsider.blogspot.com, where you'll find links to his articles, his business, his YouTube channel. All of that information is there, and of course, he is here to provide us insight and information on the ongoing international economic and financial turmoil that we see around the globe. So, David Smith, always great to have you on the program. Thanks again for your time today.
Thanks a lot, and a Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, and let's hope it's a good one. But of course, rather than simply hoping, I think we have to take a look at what is actually happening. And there's a lot happening, specifically, of course, in Europe right now, specifically in Switzerland even. So I'm not sure where you'd like to begin, but perhaps we can begin by talking about something that I know is happening, but I don't see a lot of coverage about it. And I must admit that I'm not even following it very closely myself. And this is Basel III, which is, of course, the talks and accords going on, talking about international banking norms and the global financial banking system, based around, of course, the Bank for International Settlements. But I don't see a lot of coverage about this. What can you tell us about Basel III and what it means for the global banking architecture?
Well, Basel III is basically an accord where all the banks agreed to have certain levels of assets for solvency to solidify their balance sheet. And these plans were made a number of years ago. And of course, the deadlines for respecting Basel III are now approaching. However, the contradiction of Basel III is that they're trying to do it exactly at the time when the banks have been making huge losses. Their operating profits are down. So, of course, strengthening balance sheets in those conditions is very difficult, and it was going always to be a bit of a comedy show to see how actually it all played out and how they fudged the game once again. So perhaps the most interesting start point, talking about Basel III, is to go back to the Governor of the Bank of England's speech in the Guildhall about 6 months ago in June, July of this year, where the outgoing Governor, Mervyn King, explained to all those present that the fundamental problem that existed at the moment in banking was not a problem of liquidity, but in fact a problem of solvency, which means that he was stating for all present that the banks were actually effectively bankrupt. And he demonstrated this by talking about Mr. Draghi's LTRO injection of 1 trillion euro into the system, which worked for 3 to 6 months. And Mervyn King's conclusion at the time was that until such time as the problem of solvency had been resolved and the European banks had been recapitalized, that the crisis that exists would carry on and on without any definitive closing date. Now, curiously enough, in the last couple of weeks, there has been the announcement that the banks have evaluated their Basel III situation. They have been given an extension in order effectively to beef up their balance sheets still more. And of course, Mervyn King comes back on and makes a rather contradictory speech that there was no easy way out given to these banks and that this wasn't a fudge or a fake or anything else. So I can only ask him to cast his mind back to his speech of 6 months ago, which is fully documented and available anywhere on the internet. So Basel III, in short, is a fudge. The essential nature of it is that they have left the door open to the banks to continue basically to gouge money out of the pockets of taxpayers and their clients by whatever device is possible to strengthen their balance sheets over the next couple of years. Now, the other thing that's, of course, been in view recently has been the settlement of the robo-signing scandal in America, where the famous Mrs. Linda Green signed goodness knows how many millions of papers with different signatures, which were all basically forgeries, and which became a kind of symbol of the problem. So the banks have really had a very good week. They've managed to get around Basel III with another fairy story. And at the same time, they've been given a slap on the hand type of penalty on the robo-signing scandal, which basically, if actually applied literally, which meant that they had no title to the properties they were trying to foreclose on would basically have created a liquidity and financial crisis, which would have brought down the major banks. So once again, what we're seeing is the usual thing of the banks being protected from the errors of their ways. And of course, there are no criminal proceedings whatsoever being taken against the officials of those banks for the terrible offenses that they've committed.
Unfortunately so, and just to back up what you're saying there, this did come across the news wires just earlier today from the Economic Times out of India. Compromise on Basel III norms is a reminder of power of global banks. And they're noting that the liquidity coverage ratio in Basel III is the deadline to meet that LCR is being extended another 4 years. So exactly right. They can say whatever they want in these meetings and come up with whatever accords they want, but then they can just bend the rules to whatever they want, whenever they want, however they want, in order to profit their bottom lines and to make sure that they don't have to admit their insolvency. So, of course, it is just a vicious circle there, and the robo-signing is just another example of the complete lack of accountability and the fact that banksters are not going to jail in record numbers, as we all know they should be, given just the incredible things that have been happening in the past few years. On that note, some interesting things happening in Switzerland still with UBS and other big news. Anything else you'd like to cover in Switzerland specifically?
Well, I think the subject of constant interest in Switzerland at the moment is what the hell is happening in the Swiss Central Bank. They started about 15 months ago their policy of maintaining the euro exchange rate at 120 against the Swiss franc in order to protect the exporters. However, instead of this being a temporary measure which was designed to beat back the market pressures, the pressure has been unrelenting. And in order to maintain the peg, the Swiss National Bank is now approximately half a trillion Swiss francs, or 75% of GDP and rising, in foreign currency reserves. And this money is not being diversified. I mean, they're trying to get out of the euro, so they've got big dollar holdings now, and they're also buying government bonds and looking at buying things like the EFSF bonds as well. So basically, they've taken the Swiss franc, put it in the dustbin, and tried to pull the Swiss franc out, and all they've taken out with it is garbage. So you have all these dreadful investments, and I did raise the issue, which is not my original idea, but certainly would make a lot of sense. If they had used the same money, they could have bought two-thirds of Apple, or they could have bought General Electric twice over. Or they could be sitting today on a massive, massive pile of half a trillion Swiss francs worth of gold, for example, which would have made the gold prices certainly move sky high. And once again, you know, defying logic, they've done the opposite of what would make any sense. And one can only say that, you know, this could well be just one more little maneuver to protect the global banking interests to the detriment of the Swiss nation as a whole.
Exactly right, and it is interesting. I mean, it's like they're trying to get off the Titanic with a ticket on the Hindenburg or something. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous trying to buy into EFSF and US dollars and all of this. Ambrose Evans-Pritchard had a recent article that I found quite interesting. I don't know if you saw it. Switzerland and Britain are now at currency war, where he's talking about the Bank of England trying to drive down the sterling through quantitative easing, and the Swiss National Bank responding with an outright blitz of gilt purchases. Any ideas on what's going on there?
Well, I think it's just more of the same. I mean, the Swiss are aware of the fact that they're getting stuffed with more euros than makes any sense, and they have to try and diversify. So where do you diversify into? I mean, the UK would not be my first choice, but if you reject the Japanese yen, which is in difficulties at the moment, if you reject the euro and you don't like the dollar, there are only very few currencies you can go for. One of them is the UK, where there is still a little bit of liquidity. And of course, this is the opposite of what the UK Central Bank wants. They want to weaken their currency as well. And the arrival of Mr. Carney, which we kind of heralded in our last talk at the end of last year, is certainly going to provoke yet more currency wars. And I just see no end in sight to it. There is it is just a mechanism for, again, pushing the problem forward. And if everyone's depressing their currency, the end result is nobody does. And it reaches a point where you look at, for example, a guideline which used to have had some significance, which is the USDX, which is a kind of US dollar exchange rate against a basket of currencies. And now what it is it's the US dollar exchange rate against a series of basket case currencies. So it has become completely meaningless as an indication of anything at all.
Well, exactly as you indicate, of course, what we see is this race to the bottom through currency after currency. And of course, it only stands to reason that precious metals and other commodities would be the places to go as safe harbors during this time of instability. But of course, as you say, we've seen this capping of the gold price. It's struggling to get over 1700 right now. There is this repression in the market that we've talked about before. I've heard about possibility of default of the COMEX for a long time. What's your take on this? Do you think there's anything to this? Could it happen in the near term?
Well, it's very difficult to say definitively. I mean, I've been hearing the same story for 12, 24 months, and there are websites such as King World News who report on the imminent demise of these organizations. But, you know, my general observation is if you were to put yourself in the situation of a Mr. Bernanke and you realize that you have basically no way out of the situation you created, out of the money printing situation, and the biggest indicator that there is a problem is the rising price of gold and silver, then if you had the power to rig the markets, which they do in every respect from liquidity to LIBOR to the gold price, I mean, the gold price is a small price to pay to just hammer it down regularly so that the gold price movement is counter to logic, but it's exactly in line with what the banks want. So it is just one more manipulated market. And ultimately, people will understand that. They're going to withdraw from, you know, going anywhere near paper, gold, and silver and end up with physical. And the movements of physical gold seem to be going from west to east. And I think, as I was saying a little earlier about the Swiss National Bank, they'd have been infinitely better advised to stack gold at this point and that way use up their dollars. And it would have strengthened their position considerably. But I'm pretty sure there's a cartel arrangement between these organizations not to touch gold. And eventually what will happen, probably at some indeterminate date, is that the cupboard will be bare, and then there will be force majeure declared, and these big banks will be bailed out once again for having played the game of essentially the government.
Exactly right, and I think we can liken this to the rubber band analogy. You can keep pulling on the rubber band, but eventually it's going to snap, and when it does, that's going to completely break the system. And you mentioned the west to east movement of these gold holdings. I think that's right on, because of course we've seen China buying lots of gold under the radar. They haven't released any new holdings statistics for a number of years now, but when they do, it's expected that their holdings are at least going to have doubled over this past period. Russia also buying quite a bit of gold since at least Putin came back to power. So I think we see a lot of gold purchases happening in the East right now. And interestingly, I think that this might tie into the March BRICS summit in Durban, where they're supposedly going to be working on launching this BRICS development bank. I wonder if this is a move for capitalization of such a bank and whether it might be an attempt to start a true alternative infrastructure to the IMF World Bank international financial architecture. So that, to my mind, could be one of those catalysts that happen this year that truly change things up and perhaps affect a change in that gold market. First, what's your take on that? And second, are there other types of catalysts that you have your eyes on for the year ahead?
That's a very big question. I mean, I think that these developing countries are certainly not stupid, and they're well advised, and they can see perfectly well the fact that all of their savings accounts in excess dollars are just being destroyed in value. Now, their problem is they can't pull the rug on it and just jump out from one day to the next. So you see, for example, with China, they're slowly diminishing their interest in U.S. government bonds. as far as what they are actually trying to work on between themselves, bit by bit, we keep seeing special regional deals done to basically get around having to go through dollars and deal with dollars. And I think on the point you're raising about how much gold that China will actually have, they're not really under any obligation to tell what the truth of their holdings are. So when they declare it, I'm pretty sure it'll not be the truth. The other thing I'm pretty sure is not the truth is the holdings that are declared by America, something over 8,000 tons, because if you take the logic that the only source of physical gold is gold above the ground, where, you know, then you take production at the moment, which is at pretty much all-time lows, the most likely source of the Chinese gold has been gold that's been leased out from the central bank in from Fort Knox in America, and which is then physically delivered to China. So when the music stops and everyone actually has to count their physical gold, I'm more inclined to believe the Chinese figures than the American. But there certainly is not going to be enough to go around. And the person who's left out on that little game is going to be very, very unhappy.
Well, that's a very good point. And of course, we did see the first sign that someone might be asking for the music to stop last year with that German bank, central bank, about talking about the gold reserves, etc. So it is interesting to see how that's going to play out over the next year and whether there will be some major movement in that. One other topic that I really wanted to touch on today, not so much on the economic side of things, so much as the cultural, but of course, what we see going on in the States right now is this big cultural conversation about gun control and the possibility now that Biden is saying that Obama is going to use executive orders to try to implement some kind of restriction on the Second Amendment, etc. Of course, in these debates, something that comes up quite a lot is Switzerland as another example of a country that has quite liberal gun ownership rules. You're there, of course, in Switzerland. What can you say about your perspective on this debate that's happening in the States right now?
Yeah, well, let me just pick up my AK-47 and we can talk about it. you know, the situation here is extraordinarily different. I mean, every young Swiss has to do military service, which for a landlocked country is something that makes perfect sense, because they were faced with that issue at the start of the Second World War, and the Germans never invaded simply because the Swiss made it fairly obvious that the price to pay would be too high for the advantages. So this, let's call it militarization, is still going on. It serves a very useful purpose, in as much as it unites people from all around a country which is not that big, but which has got three or four different languages and cultures. They all go through this program, and everybody learns to shoot properly. Everyone knows how in the male population, at least, how to use serious weapons, and they know where to go if there's a war, where they got to get together, where they're going to be based, and you've got this in the culture. Therefore, lots of people also, because of this, have their own guns apart from the military ones, which are issued, which you have to keep in your house. People go to shooting ranges. It's a bit like America in that respect. But in terms of issues, there are almost never any violent issues. You may get some mentally unstable person who may commit suicide, or there's been recently a case where someone went on a rampage in a little village about 100 miles from where I'm living and killed a couple of people. But these are so exceptional that it's kind of once every 3 years an event like this, because people have a discipline. They know how to use guns. If you want, as a private citizen, to get one, such as myself, I mean, I have arms at home, you have to apply for a license, go through all the checks, meet the police, they check up on you, and you can get the weapon. And they have specific restrictions on who can get. And, for example, they exclude specific nationalities who they do not want physically to possess guns in the country. And these nationalities essentially are Eastern European, where, unfortunately for them and for us, you know, their crime practices are infinitely worse than anything here. So I think Switzerland is a model of having an armed population who treat what they have with respect, where there are no issues and or almost none, and there isn't this kind of outrage nonsense that we see on the television. And for example, Piers Morgan, who was on television recently, a fugitive from Britain and the Hackgate scandals. I listened to his interview with Alex Jones, which was extreme comedy. And once again, you know, the underlying tragedy is there. But this is extremely good distraction for the American public from anything of any ultimate importance, despite the tragedy for the people concerned.
Well, exactly right. It seems to me that, of course, these tragedies are just used as an excuse to raise this question over and over again, and what kind of restrictions can be brought in. And it doesn't seem to have a lot to do with the actual statistics. Do you think, looking forward, do you think that this is going to be able to be used to bring in some new legislation, or will this be headed off?
Well, I think the gun lobby in America is a very, very powerful lobby. And it basically is one of the things that divides America into two countries, or the liberal philosophy and you know, the traditional frontiersman kind of philosophy, which exists in many states in America. It's an interesting test for Obama, because I'm sure that he made a very emotional appeal with, I don't know if they were real tears or crocodile tears on the television, about how sad he was about all these poor children getting killed. But he doesn't seem to quite think about children in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, and many other places who are dying in 10 times those numbers under his specific orders. So hypocrisy at a minimum, crocodile tears at the worst. And once again, it's an opportunity to consolidate power by trying to pass an executive order on an issue which people would, in other circumstances, never ever contemplate acceptance of such a thing happening. Whether he gets away with it, I don't know. Whether he tries it, we'll just have to wait and see.
I guess so. I agree with your assessment completely, except I think that the gun lobby in the U.S. is largely directed by the NRA, which I think is a corrupt organization, which at the top is happy to work with the establishment on a number of issues. So we'll see if they bend on this and make a big show out of compromise as a way of moving forward, which of course are two of the terms that they love to use in this Obama administration. And we'll see how, I guess, the second term of Obama plays out socially, culturally, and economically. All right, well, we've covered quite a bit today. Anything else that you'd like to talk about before we let you go?
I think for me, we've done the tour. Next time, we'll another day, another subject.
Absolutely. Well, once again, let's remind people about your website and what they can find there.
Yeah, I have a website, the Geneva Business Insider, which does TV interviews, video interviews, radio interviews, and also written blog posts from time to time. I do this to inform people who are interested enough to try and learn about what's going on. I have a certain different view because I'm based in Switzerland, and I also have certain experience, which is basically from the financial sector. So I can bring to people's attention a lot of things and a lot of perspectives which they may not have. So that's my main purpose. My business website is linked to there. I provide financial and advisory services to corporations and high net worth individuals. And if I can be any help to anyone listening, I'd be only too pleased to do so.
Excellent. Well, we always appreciate your time. I'm looking forward to our next conversation. David L. Smith, the Geneva Business Insider, thank you again for your time today.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here once again.